Welcome back to the Amazing Gamers Podcast, a just for fun production about media that matters and why we love it so much. Your host, Nathan Lamb, is not an amazing gamer, but he sure knows a few people who are. This is our conversation for today. Welcome back to the Amazing Gamers Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Lamb, and I'm completely thrilled today. I have a couple of amazing gamers in the chat with me today. I'd love to start with a quick round of introductions.
Hi, my name is Maggie Jones Ludi, also known as Avenger Mags on social media, and I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Nathan.
Always a pleasure.
And my name is Ed Hopkins. I have no social media tag because I'm old. And I have known Nathan since I was in like third grade, I think.
My original D&D buddy. It's fantastic to have you here today, Ed. And we're going to share some war stories. And Maggie's going to throw in some as well because Dungeons & Dragons is something that we all have in common. And I think we have some good stories that we can share today. But before we do that, I wanted to share one quick story about parenting. This morning, this was an example of me making progress. I'm making my coffee in the morning. Stella walks into the kitchen. It's like, Daddy, we're going for Dunks. I want hot cocoa. And I was like, oh, Stella, I can't do that. I'm making breakfast for the family. We got some things that we're doing here. She's like, you're bad. You're lame. And I say, well, be that as it may, I have a counter offer for you. My counter offer is if we eat breakfast with no incident, I will make you some hot cocoa at home. And Stella gives me the look. And it's like she's got the lip. Like she's like really evaluating this proposal. And I'm like, I think that's a pretty good deal. And she's like, okay. But yeah, my daughter is a complete boss. She will keep you on your toes. And it was a fun experience. And I had a feeling that both of you might appreciate that story about being parents. Ed is amazing with kids and always has been. And it's something that I really admire. And I think we both kind of have the same voice for when we have to make a proposal to a kid and we're not sure how they're going to take it. I think we both sort of have that voice we go into.
I like to think reasonable is a good bottom line, yeah. You know, and as long as everyone's reasonable.
I think so. So yes, Dungeons and Dragons. So my first RPG, I think a lot of people's first RPG was Dungeons and Dragons. I would just love to go around the group. Maybe start with you, Maggie, because Ed and I's story, I can't wait to hear Ed's story too, because I've never heard it. Ed was there for my beginning with D&D, but I haven't heard Ed's story. But if you want to start, Maggie, with how you started with D&D, your introduction to it, I'd love to hear it.
Sure. Yes, of course. So my very first job was working at Kroger, which is a grocery store chain. And while I was working there, I met a friend, and we're still friends even to this day. This was around 10 years ago. So my friend Jenny and her husband introduced me to the hobby. They were longtime D&D players. Like they'd been playing for a while and I had kind of heard of it, but never really had the chance to play it with people. And I was like, sure, like let's try it out. Like this was something I never tried it, but I'd always kind of been interested in RPGs and played them. And so I'm like, sure, why not? Like, let's give it a try. And it was so much fun. It was around a decade ago. And I've been playing in some capacity ever since. I haven't been in like a campaign like from then until now, but pretty much all throughout the years, it's been a constant presence in my life since then.
I salute anyone who can get it together and stay part of a campaign. Cause man, I have been out of the loop on that scene for a long time. So
it's a struggle. Yeah. And I think it's hard because you really have to find a group of people that are willing to plan and you know, like pick a part of their week or month or whatever to set aside for that. And that can be difficult. But if you can find a group that can do that, it's really special.
How about you, Ed? How did you start?
If we're talking like strictly D&D, it was think back in elementary school, like late elementary school. It was some kids on the bus whose names I don't even remember. I hung out with them like one time and played D&D. But from then, you know, I got the old school like red basic set.
Yeah.
You know, when they came in like two books.
I had that one.
But I think it all stemmed like even earlier back from like just being really interested in like that kind of story, like the epic storytelling.
Yep.
Like King Arthur and all of those kinds of, you know, stories like that. King Arthur, Conan the Barbarian, like really kind of RPG-esque storytelling. I think it was fertile ground for the mechanics and the system to find. I have not been able to find a regular group. And in all honesty, I might be able to. I live in a college town, but I haven't prioritized it. I've had other things that have taken my time, but who knows what the future will bring.
Yeah. Yeah. There's still time. You're telling me you have a few things opening up on the calendar at our last annual meeting at the Alchemist. By the way, I'm inviting you to our next, the 2025 edition of our annual meeting at the Alchemist. I'm sending out your invite now, Ed. So, looking forward to it. Can't wait.
I'll be there.
Excellent. Oh, this is great. So yeah, like it's awesome that you brought the bus, because the bus is how I met Ed and it's how I started with D&D. So Vermont's a weird place. Like we lived at the bottom of the valley. There was two highways on each side of the valley. And I lived like about maybe 5 miles from the high school, but the bus went all the way around the valley and like out into the sticks where Ed lives. I'm sorry, Ed, but North Cambridge, man. North Cambridge is just like all these dirt roads and it's like a maze of dirt roads.
Yeah, I still don't know them all.
There's a lot. So we had like 45 minutes on the bus every evening on the ride home. And most of the time I would sit with Ed, and we had another friend who lived next door to Ed. And there were definitely times like morning. I don't think we played cards on the bus, but like when we were in study hall in the morning, we would play Dungeons and Dragons sometimes. And then after a little while, we were getting together like on the weekends to play. And that was my introduction to it. I think I was always a Tolkien guy. So for me, it was kind of a natural sort of thing. And the Tolkien connection is going to resume in this discussion, because we also played a lot of Middle Earth role-playing in high school. Our most infamous Dungeons and Dragons adventures did stem from that. If we want to, maybe we could kind of share that one, because that was like a seminal memory from my high school days. And I haven't played since. I play RPGs like constantly as video games. But to actually play D&D, it has been like since high school, I think. So I can start that one off? Do you want to go, Ed? Or Maggie, who wants to go with that one? All right.
Go for it.
So there's two adventures that come to mind in my lifetime for playing D&D. And one of them was I DM'd Ed and his brother once on the Isle of Dread, which was a fairly basic module that came with the expert set. It's like your garden variety King Kong's Island with all sorts of crazy stuff on it, and you just explore
dinosaurs.
I lived and made the chief of the village where you first start. I made him a much bigger character. I made sort of knowing the chief like your gold key to the Isle of Dread, where whenever they would get in trouble, they could just drop chief's name and people would know, and they're like, oh, okay, you're cool, chief. All right, things are. We had a lot of fun. That was probably my best adventure. My most memorable adventure was actually like a series. This was like a 10-part series at least. And I'm going to give a little background because this is kind of epic. But we all loved Middle-earth role-playing. We loved Moria. Moria was my favorite part of Middle-earth growing up. There's other stuff in the books I prefer now. But when I was a kid, I thought Moria was so cool. And there was another kid in our group. We had a pretty good sized group. I've sometimes been amazed how many people I connected with in high school who had similar interests. We had like six, seven, eight people that we would get together and we would do this. But we had another guy in our group who was obsessed with the idea of getting Durin's belt out of Moria. And we had like about 10 expeditions into Moria. They were always led by Dane's nephew. Dane Ironfoot had a nephew who was my friend who wanted to get Durin's belt. He wanted to have some claim to it once he, you know, got it back from the Balrog. And so, and speaking of the Balrog, that is where just about every one of those expeditions met an extremely violent and quick end. It was, you know, I loved going into Moria. It was amazing. Like, it was kind of a dream come true. But after about a half dozen times, it was, you could kind of sense that the DM was maybe having a little too much fun with the prospect of my friend who was a big fan of Durin's belt there. And Ed was there for just about all of these adventures.
Yeah.
too. Like, Dane's nephew was always the first to go, man. He was like the linchpin. And he would build like the most incredible tank characters to try to just survive the onslaught from the Balrog until the rest of us could take it down. And boy, it never even came close to working. And yeah, like he would always be the first to go. And then the others, Ed would always like go near the end. Like Ed was kind of like, okay, look, I'm going to kill all the characters. I'll make it somewhat quick. And, you know, I won't toy with you. Like that was my sense, Ed, that you weren't high on the hit list.
Yeah, no. Well, you were all so good at pushing each other's buttons. And I think several other people in the party adopted an attitude of, well, I know he's going to bump me off, so. I did used to, like, straight up make a second copy of my character before I went over, just because you knew yours was going to die. I remember some of the later, quote-unquote, excursions. We had people that were setting up their character, like, I can't remember who it was, but someone set up their character so as soon as stuff hit the fan, they could, like, teleport out. Another person was just like, you know what? Forget all you other people. I'm just going to have every single healing spell known to anyone and try to make it out. And those major whites were a major problem. Now I was going to say, even if they couldn't take you out, they'd give you so many penalties to everything that you tried to do that essentially in the end, you'd have like hit points, but just be like in the fetal position. And that was it.
Negative 200 modifier on all action.
Yeah. It just didn't matter.
So it was an epic fail, no matter what you did. And the last time we went, the dungeon master decided that the walls of Moria could not be teleported in and out of. And I distinctly remember at that point, my appetite for any further adventures into Moria pretty much flatlined, and that was it. But, and then like one last thing on this, which is awesome. I had a period about 5 years ago where I was buying MERP source books on eBay. Like I was buying them cheap. And I bought the one for Angmar, which was the Witch King's kingdom in the north. And like, you know, I always love the ones about the bads. I think those are pretty cool. I was reading about the Witch King's lieutenants, and there was this one guy who had a magic belt, and he didn't know it. He did not know it. This is true. Hand on the Bible. It was Durin's belt, and I took a photo of it. He didn't know it was Durin's belt. It was like if any dwarf saw it, they would know it was Durin's belt. It was just some man who found it and was like, this is a magic belt, and he put it on. It was Durin's belt. I photographed that.
Never
put it
on Facebook.
Tagged the guy who was Dane's nephew, and I'm like, bro, we were looking in the wrong place. We were like 8 miles away. And we sent 10 waves of characters in the Moria to get destroyed. The Balrog didn't even have it. And he just wrote back and he was like, dang.
All that time.
You know, it was a little bit of perspective. The DM, like, I wonder if the DM was ever going to let us know that, like, if we ever somehow beat the Balrog, he was going to go, oh, by the way, Durin's belt, yeah. We're all out of those. We're fresh out. Sorry.
That assumes that they were ever going to let us survive.
Yeah, that was definitely...
I find fault with your premise.
Yeah, no, and I think that's why maybe our DM probably didn't worry about that detail like has this little ace in the hole just in case, like, you know, we rolled triple zeros three times and broke the bank Monte Carlo or something. Maggie, Ed, who wants to go next with the infamous adventure?
Go for it.
Okay, so I will share two. One of them isn't really an adventure, I would say. It's just something that kind of happened to our party. And so for the rest of the campaign, we had this, like, thing that reminded us just what happened. So basically, like, the first session, all of our characters meet, and we don't all gel well together. The characters that we've created, like, they're not all on the same wavelength. I'm sure we've all have been in a D&D party where, like, our characters may not get along because of different alignments or different personalities. So we had a necromancer and we had a paladin, and we were fighting through this one dungeon that we had to get out of before we could really start our adventure. And one of the paladin's allies was taken out. He was just killed. And so the necromancer was like, I'm going to reanimate him. And she did. And then the paladin got really upset and cut him back in half. And so we had a pair of legs that followed us throughout the campaign that were just running and, like, stuck with our group. So that's one of the, like, weirdest and funniest things that has ever happened to me in a group. We would set things on the legs. Like, it was kind of like an end table that just kept following us throughout our adventure. And it was just
forever. The pre-adventure, they didn't make it to the main adventure. It's like at the beginning of a James Bond movie where there's, like, that 5-minute adventure that has nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
He basically died in that. Oh man, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then
he had some fun with the legs.
Yes, that was just an ever-present reminder that, like, those two did not really hit it off well or get off on the right foot, pun intended. So nice. That was just a really fun, like, aside that we always reference. Like, remember that time when we had the pair of legs with us and they just kind of stayed with us throughout the adventure? And then I guess the other memorable one would actually be, like, one of the few times where I've been in a campaign that actually saw an end, where it resolved and, like, the main conflict kind of, like, wrapped up, and it was this epic battle at the end. Basically, it was a group that we actually had played in person for most of the time. We were a group. And we were tracking down this lady who was the daughter of the Spider Queen, Lolth, and she was trying to resurrect her mother. And so we had just been, like, trying to track her down, and we finally, like, clashed with her at this, like, big fortress at the end. And, like, we were ready. She was sending out her forces. We were storming her gates. And it was just so cool because we got to finish it. Like, we won. And we worked together, and it was only because we worked together that we were able to win. And I just think that, like, I've been in a lot of campaigns where we don't really see the end. Like, maybe for some reason we have to break up as a group because we can't meet anymore, or maybe, you know, just things happen in life. But when you can actually see an adventure that you've been through for years come to a close, it's really special. And so that is always one of the most memorable ones because, like, we just were able to do the thing, and it was really cool.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, the ones you finish. I don't think we finished. Well, I mean, ours finished in that we all died, but
like, yeah, I suppose that is a finish.
Okay, it's a conclusive ending, but oh my gosh. Ed, did you have one you wanted to throw in?
No, I had a couple others. One of them is where I ended up making this dungeon for D&D. And ran a small group through it, including my brother, who found himself in possession of a ring of contrariness, which suited his personality at the time to an unhealthy degree. And he absolutely role-played that brilliantly to the point where there was actual infighting in the group. And people took damage, and it was kind of awesome.
You cheated up for Lucas.
Yeah. And the other memory that I had actually was a group that I was briefly a part of in college that played a different game. It was a game called Earth Dawn, which I don't know if any of you are familiar with the old Shadowrun game. It is made by the same company, but instead of being like a cyberpunk sci-fi world, it's their fantasy-esque game. And there you go, Shadowrun.
I still have Shadowrun source book from 1980-something.
Nice. And so I played with a group that did Earth Dawn for a little bit in college, and that was a lot of fun. And I've actually, on a few occasions, run an Earth Dawn group at the school I work at, and have had, you know, kids and staff jumping in and jumping out, and just really tried to at least provide some of those, you know, random ridiculous memories of, remember the time threw my sleeping bag in the fire and then tried to throw it at that guy, you know.
you want to hope for a 20 instead of a 1 on a maneuver like that. Well, like, yeah.
Yes.
So one of the things I like about Earth Dawn, and one of the reasons that I picked the edition that I did, is it wasn't a D20 based system. It had all sorts of different like levels, and it would be like a D4 and then a D6 and then, you know, and if you rolled the maximum number you could with that die, you got to re-roll it. So you could try some ridiculous stuff, and if you rolled good enough, you could pull it off. And the magic system was a little different and kind of cool. So I like that, and I actually picked that when I did stuff with the kids because I figured it was one that no one would be familiar with, so nobody would have a leg up.
Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome.
I had some modules when I was a kid that were amazing. I had one that was a Lich's Tomb, and it was like one that was from a D&D tourney, like one of the very first. And it was, do you remember that one, Ed? Did I ever show that one to you?
Yeah.
Oh man, those were very bonkers adventures. I wish we'd broken those out, but you needed like a super powerful party of like 6 people with 20th level characters who wouldn't be, you know, they'd have to be okay with the prospect of you are raiding a Lich's Tomb, and there's a pretty decent chance you might not make it, because
reading the module really like was one of those choose your own adventures where it's like every third or fourth option is and you die.
Yep. So I thought maybe I'd ask if to go around with favorite campaign settings and why. I can throw mine out if you want to hear, just to give an idea. So I was reading Ravenloft because I had the Ravenloft box set. I got that for Easter like 20 years ago, the original. That was like the horror D&D one. And I thought that was like really cool. It's like the demi plane of dread. And there's all these little like islands in it. And each domain, they're called domains. And each domain has a lord. And the lord is completely evil and they're completely cursed. And they have a story and a reason why. And it's like poetic justice. Those were cool. Going back to it now, I was amazed at how much it has evolved in a good way. Like, the Dark Lords used to be like the big bad off in the shadows. In the more recent versions, the Dark Lords are very active, and you're probably going to meet them fairly quick once you get into their domain. And they're not going to attack you. They are going to kind of get you caught up in whatever their game is. And one of my favorite examples is there's one who's a wolfwear bard. And his thing is that he's incredibly talented, but he's kind of like the has-been superstar. And his arc is that he'll find someone who is talented and take them under their wing and sort of ride their coattails. But the thing is he eventually will get jealous and it will become a sort of dangerous situation. And he's cursed that people won't really remember him. Like, he's a really talented musician, but he slips mind, but people will remember his protege. And you sort of like, that's an example of how Ravenloft kind of works. You get caught up in a story of somebody who is cursed because they did something awful. And they're sort of forced to play out this scenario over and over again. And you get wound up in them. And just about any horror story you've read, there is a version of it in Ravenloft. There's like a Wicker Man world. There's a Dracula one. There's a one with a Hill House. So like any kind, there's one. Oh my God, there's one. I'll give you another example of how it evolved just really quick. There was one where there was a guy called Vlad Dracov, and he was basically like a Vlad Tempest character. And that was okay. He was like, you know, the bad who impales people and he's badass, whatever. In the newer versions, it's a zombie apocalypse world. And Vlad is a woman. And Vlad is the commander, like in The Walking Dead. And basically, Vlad is like the general, like defending the castle against hopeless odds, always under attack. And basically, if you come into there, she's going to press gang you into her army to defend the territory. And it's like The Walking Dead. Like, seriously, the evolution of it has just been incredible. And I love it. And I'm so glad I'm not one of those people who's closed-minded about when things change. Because a lot of times when things change, people put some creativity and thought and can come up with something that's a little more interesting than what it was. Because in the past, he was just kind of this big bad that you would fight and probably lose to. In this one, in the newer ones, she's a character that you're going to have to deal with and try to outsmart and try to desert and run away and not get killed by the zombies on your way out the door. So it's, yeah, Ravenloft is pretty sweet. I'll throw it out to whoever wants to talk campaign. Thank you for letting me talk about Ravenloft. I do love Ravenloft.
Okay, so this might be a bit of a controversial answer, but I wanted to go ahead and just bring it forward. So I've played in a lot of different campaign settings, like, you know, like the Forgotten Realms, pretty common one. I played in Wildemount, which is based on like Critical Role and their universe and kind of expanding upon that. And then I've also played in a lot of like homebrew locations that DMs have kind of like developed on their own and built their own setting. But honestly, I don't have a favorite because to me, I don't think that's the most important part of the game. I think that like the characters and I guess like kind of how they interact with the world and how your party interacts with it is always what I've found the most interesting. And I don't necessarily think like the setting, like the land that it takes place on matters a ton if you have a lot of people and a lot of great characters that are fleshed out that make it come alive. So I know that's a bit of a curveball, but when I saw that question that you sent over, Nathan, I was like, really? Like that's what I want to see. I want to hear from the people there and hear about like, what are the problems going on in this world? Like what is like the motivation of like the big bad? Were they like scorned? Were they always evil? Like what happened to them? And like, why are we doing what we're doing? And then lastly, like the party itself that you're a part of, like, what are they all about? And are you going to be able to work together? And so all of those like character dynamics to me are like the best part. So I hope that's an okay answer. I don't really have a favorite, but I have to have like that good like character interaction for it to really matter.
Nice.
I would say actually yes to like everything that you just said. I think most of my experience has been in homebrew, like basic, you know, I suppose it would be Forgotten Realms, or you know, generic homebrew D&D world, AD&D world. And that it really is kind of all about the characters and the role play and how the group gets along and tries to navigate the story. I will say that there are two settings that I've always been intrigued by and never had a chance to play in. And those were the Dark Sun and Spelljammer settings. I know I'm old, so they go back a ways. But I always thought that the kind of fabric that each of those was made out of was a pretty interesting backdrop and introduced some pretty cool dynamics into the game.
They were a little more customized than they were a little different. They weren't your standard Tolkien-esque sort of RPG setting.
Yeah.
That was my sense that they had a little bit, they were a little more far out.
Yeah. Dark Sun was like this super unforgiving like desert world where like there were two types of magic and one type like sucked the life out of the earth and it was so harsh that you started on like level 3 or something like that just cuz and then Spelljammer was like outer space and like introduce like ships and fighting each other's or fighting each other and like the Mind Flayer Empire and that sort of stuff is where I first came across that.
Nice. Is Spelljammer still in? Because Spelljammer is old. Like you see that referenced in like the original AD&D book. Is like Spelljammer still around?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Dark Sun was more recent. I remember that was like Y2K-ish.
Maybe a little before that, but yeah.
Yeah, a little more recent. Yeah, no, I've been out of the game for a while. One last one on D&D. Favorite character class or the one you'd play if you were starting a campaign today? You want to take that one, Ed?
I mean, traditionally, I always played the fighter. The solid, not necessarily meeting the stats for a paladin, but heart in the right place. I think now I would probably play something like that, or maybe like some sort of monk character. I've always liked the martial arts thing, and now I feel like maybe I have a little of a bit of an excuse to be able to do that.
Yeah, definitely. One thing, did you ever read Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the Dunkin' Egg stories by R.R. Martin?
No, I don't think so. I might have, but...
I have the graphic novel. You need to read that because Dunk...
I think I've seen the graphic novel.
Yeah, Dunk is like this big, like, huge, strong guy. And Dunk absolutely reminds me of your fighter characters. Like, really quickly... Dunk is a squire for a knight, and at the very beginning of the first one, the knight dies, and Dunk is burying him, and Dunk is like, what am I going to do now? Because, like, he's like, I can sell his armor and his sword, and then what am I going to do? So instead, he takes the sword and the armor, and he pretends to be Sir Dunk, and he goes on, I will lend you that next time I'm up, but Dunk is an incredibly sweet guy who follows his heart, and it sometimes gets him in trouble, and it leads to some really awesome adventures. Maggie, have you read that one?
Mm-mm, I've not read it.
HBO is adapting it. I've seen the photos. They're going to make it. The Dunkin' Egg stories are very good. It's kind of like The Hobbit to The Lord of the Rings. It's really Dunkin' Egg story. It's not a big epic. Dunkin' Egg sort of move through what's happening in Westeros, but it's very focused on them. And each of the stories is about Dunk. But yeah, Dunk is big and strong, and he does what he thinks is right, and then sometimes he kicks himself afterwards. So I think you would get a kick out of Dunk.
Nice. Yep. Nope. That rings a bell.
Nice. How about you, Maggie?
Oh, I've always enjoyed playing tanks. That is like my absolute favorite. I love a good paladin tank. That's what I'm playing right now in Baldur's Gate 3. I'm also playing a paladin in the current D&D campaign that I'm in. I just love it. The best feeling in the world is getting into combat and the DM saying, does that hit? And you're like, no, it doesn't. And just getting to say that so much because your armor class is so high. So as far as class goes, love paladin. I love a cleric as well. And I've also played as a druid, like a nature tank type build. And as far as like my characters go, I always try to put a little like piece of myself in them. Like whether it's a flaw, like a personality flaw, or just like a trait, like I try to do that because like it's a different character than you. Like you are like playing as a character, but I think just to have that connection, I like to do that. So yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, I was gonna say the nature tank, like the wooden tank. It's like, yes. From olden times, the wooden tank's coming because I can't use any steel or iron. No, that's great. I sometimes would go mage. When we were playing Middle Earth role playing, I would go mage because I needed that teleport spell. that was key. Generally, otherwise, I was like a rogue. I'd be like a Locke Cole sort of like rogue with a heart of gold sort of thing. I think if I was doing it now, and I was sometimes a bard, I would do a bard and I would role play more. Like I would do way more like skill checks against charisma to try and pull off like just con jobs and flim flam and firing people up. And like, just, that's really what a bard is supposed to do. It's a little role playing intensive because their abilities on paper are not, at least in the old versions, were not particularly overwhelming. I think you're supposed to kind of be like the people person who pulls off all these outrageous sort of things, and maybe a little bit of a trickster, you know, sort of throw that in. I think our DM back in the day maybe was, you know, he was kind of anti-trickster unless he was the trickster, in which case the, you know, Ed knows.
Very much. I think the other class I feel like I have to mention is, I guess in D&D it would be a ranger, but in other games, like any sort of like archer class, I like playing those as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are good. When I play like a video game RPG, I always like the ranger, where it's like the high offense, not so much the defense, but maybe you can sort of overwhelm, or like you can go from distance, because ranger was pretty good at they should have a high dexterity. So you should be pretty good with a ranged weapon too. Yeah, they had a lot of nice versatility, which I was a fan of. So let me see. We're at about 50 minutes. Man, the time always flies. We could go Star Wars. We could go favorite RPGs of all time. What we're playing now. Do we want to do what we're playing now for video games?
Let's Maggie, see that.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go what we're playing now. You want to go first, Maggie?
Sure. Yeah. So I am currently playing Xenoblade Chronicles X. I've been playing it for at least a month, and I'm about 50 hours in, and there's still a lot to go. These games are known for being very long. They have really vast open worlds that you can explore. But basically, this one is cool because it's more of a spin-off of the main Xenoblade series. There's Xenoblade 1, 2, and 3. And then there was X. And X initially came out on the Wii U. And until this year, it was kind of stuck on that console and on Switch. And it's much easier to play it. And I love this series. Like, it's great, like, very story focused, but like with a vast open world that you can really explore and dig into. And so it's been fun to kind of play this one that I've not had a chance to play until this year. So I'm just kind of soaking that in, exploring the world, doing missions for all the side characters, which are really good. I guess just to wrap it up, the premise of this one is that humanity had to escape Earth because it was destroyed during a war of two alien races. And so you crash land on this planet, and you have to kind of make this planet hospitable to live. And so there's so many like conflicts and challenges in that process. And you can kind of see in the side quests that a situation like this brings out the best and the worst in humanity. And it kind of illustrates how that can happen in so many different ways. So that's been what I've enjoyed the most, is just seeing like how the side quests unfold. And some of them can get really dark, but it's like, yeah, if we were crash landed on a planet, I am sure there'd be people who are doing this. And so it's a really cool way that they tell that story.
Oh, that sounds pretty wild. I think Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and I kind of bounced off it. There was a mandatory fight that I couldn't get past, and I didn't think to use the internet. So it's still sitting there. Someday I will circle back. But X sounds a bit different. This sounds a little different.
It is. Yeah. Like, you don't have to play the others to understand what's happening. Like, you can just jump into this one. And the other cool thing that it has that the other games don't is that you can get a mech, and you can like stomp around or even drive around the planet, because the mech can turn into like a motorized vehicle, and so that helps you kind of explore the planet more effectively. So it's fun.
See, I needed a mech when I was like having to fight these hoodlums in a town. Where in the one, because it wasn't actually hoodlums, it was a bunch of like corrupt guards. They found me and they wouldn't let me go, and it was an unavoidable fight that I kept losing. That's which is like that's a tough pill to swallow some days. That's not what you're looking for at times. But if I recommend it, you like it?
Oh, yeah. The Xenoblade series is one of my favorites. This one, I feel like it's a little weaker in terms of the main story, but the side stories make up for it. So, like, if you are good with, like, kind of having exploring a planet as the main focus and uncovering, like, mysteries along the way, like, that's kind of what it's about.
Nice. Yeah. I do like side quests. I'm a big side quest guy, unless it's bottomless side quests and mini games, which we might get to in a bit. But I'm curious to hear what Ed's playing these days.
Oh, sure. I'm kind of ricocheting between the same three games I've been playing for a while. I have my old baseball game on my PS3. And then on my PS4, I've been playing Borderlands 3. I just saw that they have a release date for Borderlands 4, which is awesome, but I'm guessing that it means I'm going to have to buy a PS5, which is not as awesome. And the other game I've been playing actually gave me an idea for another conversation I'd love to have sometime. I'm playing the electronic version of an old board game that we used to play back in the day, Talisman. They have Talisman on the PS4, and I often have that going as I'm like folding laundry or something. I'll take my turn, and then, you know, the other AI players will take their turn, and I'll take my turn. And...
Oh my god, we did Talisman on my birthday, and you were like razzing me because I was the druid who can change.
Oh god, that's right.
And I kept becoming neutral or neutral as was convenient. I was just going around, and you were just like, this guy believes in nothing. He's just going to put on whatever face for Death and Gold Farm. Sure, I'll be.
You know what? It was a really long drive back. Can I blame the drive back?
Yes. No, you played Talisman with me. You showed up for my birthday. Of course you're forgiven.
That's right.
Oh, no, that was great.
That's right. I forgot. The wishy-washy druid.
My favorite, and you have like an Ed classic that you dropped in there too. Because like with the way we played it was we would deal out three characters and you got to pick one. And I had the druid, and there was some character that was really bad. And then there was the elf, who I was like, I can't tell if he's good or bad. And I was like, the elf seems okay. And like Ed stops for a moment and goes, that is a generous assessment of the elf's abilities. I just about lost it. I was like laughing for about 5 minutes over that one. I was like, okay, I guess we're going with the druid.
Yeah.
Oh man. No, that was a good time. And hopefully at some point your list will add Persona 5 Royal into the playing. But I know how it is to bounce between three games, and you're playing those games forever. I'm in that loop now. I've been doing that for a long time. And I mean, with us too, like, I don't know how many hours a week you guys get to play. My game time is like vanishingly small. I love it. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But it's only like a few hours per week. So these games, especially when you're playing three, take forever. The games I am playing are Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Still playing that. I'm having a lot of fun. And the thing I like about the new one is that there's characters I loved from Final Fantasy VII where you see more of them. And just, you know, I could go on a long tangent. And then, yes, there's a million mini games in it too. But Tifa is incredible in this game. She's always, as one of my guests last week said, the emotional heart of the game. I would say that's 100% accurate. And then
she's the best. She's the absolute best.
She's so kind. Like, I was watching it with my son. My son was watching me play it this morning because he came down early. And he was like, can I stay down here, Dad? Because he's down early. And I was like, okay, you can stay because you're going to make a ton of noise if you go back upstairs. You're going to wake up your mom and your sister. But you have to watch me play Final Fantasy. And he was watching it. He was getting into it. And, like, when Tifa has these moments where she's kind and caring, I'm like, you know, I'll sort of call it out for him. I'll be like, you know, you're not going to find someone kinder than Tifa. And also Barrett, who is this big, tough, blustering guy, but he actually has like this amazing heart and sort of this sense of justice and standing up for people. Unfairness, bullies, like really move the needle with him. And I love Barrett. And we got to the part where Barrett gets to his hometown, and Barrett is not a hometown hero. I was calling that. I think he left under bad circumstances. Sort of calling it out for him. And he's playing Roblox, which is fun. He's not used to a game with a story where it's like real, a drama. And I think that was sort of drawing him in where he was getting into that. And then the other one I'm playing is Trails from Zero Still, which is a wonderful game. Maggie introduced me to the Trails series, which is like the longest RPG series, I think, going. And people are always like, oh, it's too long. And I'm like, just play one game. And if you like it, you can play another. You're not signing a lease with the Trails series. You're not getting married right. to the Trails series. You're not entering a binding contract with this Trails series. Just give it a try, because that's really heavy on the characters and the music and the ambiance. And there's always a story with some good mysteries. I got to the part in Trails from Zero where they found, no spoilers, but they found the little girl at the auction, and she's latched onto Lloyd, and now Lloyd and her are doing things. But I think the magic of Trails is at the beginning. Your character who's a detective who's coming home to his hometown. He's like a rookie detective, and he's thrown in with this special squad that's there to help the people. And it's basically four oddballs. And at first mm-hmm. that's all you see. But as you go through the adventures together and you see them work together, like you see them as more, you start to see all of them as more than what that first impression was. And you sort of get to know them and see them respect each other. The first time Tio did a real smile, you better believe I screenshotted that. Like Tio does the real smile, like mm-hmm. about 20 hours in. Tio is this like 14-year-old girl who's kind of like, she's a character. But yeah, she doesn't do a lot of smiling. She'll do a lot like she just looks at someone and it says stare.
Like the side eye. She gives a lot of side eye. And she's kind of hard to like crack through that exterior, but eventually they do. And she learns to like trust this group, and it's really cool to see.
I can't wait to, because I liked Tio like immediately. I liked all of them immediately. Like mm-hmm. It took me about like 5 hours to realize I really liked that group, and I'm looking forward to it. And those are really the two, like Civ 7 I have, but I can't pour the time into it because I like ones with characters and stories more. Like yeah. Civ 7 is if I just want to shut my brain off and do tactics.
Yeah.
But like, and it's fun. But yeah, those are the two, and it's been pretty great. So that's about all the time we have today for Amazing Gamers. I want to thank both of my guests today. Maggie, Ed.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining the Amazing Gamers podcast, a Just for Fun production that's recorded whenever Nathan has a little bit of free time and a friend to discuss a cool topic with. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and that you'll circle back with us next time. Until then, may all your gaming be amazing.